back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, second half of the show, time for the second biggest load of you-know-what after that whole misnomer in the first segment where you have to have a good start, and that really isn't, in fact, the case. You could win 50 of your last 60 and still make the playoffs. Anyway, the other
race to 92, or the race to 91 starts in December.
I love it. Oh, that's good promo material. I think it's
a race to 95 or 96 this year, but let's start it in October.
Okay. Well, you know what else is the absolute, just, what do they call it? A bald-faced lie? Is that what it is?
A bunch of chicken, you know what?
When players leave a game due to injury, and like an hour or two or 3 hours later, a coach addresses the media and says, "Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what happened.
Probably the next day.
No, no, but they literally say they don't know. They know. They're just not telling you. It's ridiculous. The trainers literally come to them either on the bench, or you're telling me if Sidney Crosby gets hurt, you're not finding out ASAP what his status is. Anyways, obviously, number one pick, Macklin Celebrini, gets hurt last night, and Warsawski after the game, I don't know. I got nothing. I have no idea. It's like, oh my God, stop lying to us. So,
you know, listen, here's what it is. Is it telling the truth? No. Is it lying? No. It's like,
it is lying when you say you don't know, because we know they know.
But you probably don't know the extent of it. You probably know it's the lower body.
When they choose not even to identify that there's a problem or where, that's insulting.
Yeah.
That's
it's
insulting.
Like the coach assuming you want more details than, well, you know, he hurt his lower body. We're still not sure the exact extent to the injury.
Yes.
And we got to run some tests or whatever. You can say that as opposed to say, I don't know. Looks like Celebrini in the toe pick after, you know, going on the breakaway. It kind of was a stick in the way and toe pick. Looked like he hit his right side, hip, leg significantly in the board. So, you know, those kind of injuries like David Reinbacher in Montreal, it looked like a nothing injury. And now he's had surgery. He's out 5 to 6 months. Laine looked a lot worse, and he's out 2 to 3 months, and he doesn't require surgery. So they're going to rehab it. And so sometimes Panarin lower body, but Panarin was kind of, you know, not injured, but he missed a couple of practices with lower body earlier in camp, and then he has now a lower body injury.
Tkachuk and Stützle in Ottawa, you were working that game last night.
Yes, Stützle got hit by, Montreal and Ottawa was a gong show, and it was just, again, why is there so many preseason games?
It wouldn't matter. Now, if there was two, it would still happen.
It would happen, but it... Look, put the numbers on your side. If there's half the games, you may have half the situations, right? And maybe they'll happen later in regular season. But Ridley Gregg took a run at Kirby Dach, hit him blindside, and Kirby Dach left the game, and it looked like potentially a concussion. And now you're thinking, okay, Montreal lost Reinbacher, Laine. They lost Dach last year. They may lose Dach again this year. He came back, scored a goal, actually fought Ridley Gregg. It was fine. But Arber Jackeye, who ran after Pare, you know, when he hit Laine last game, that Saturday, Toronto, Montreal, he came across on Tim Stützle way late. And it looked at first hand like he caught him right in the head. Now, after the replay, we realized that it's Stützle's own stick that hit himself in the head. Mm-hmm. So, but it still was a 5 minute for interference. And because there was an injury on the play, regardless of if it's Stützle's stick that hits himself in the face, it was still the act of interference that led to the injury. So he got a game misconduct. That's now two games in a row that Jackeye gets a game misconduct. Doesn't look like he's going to get suspended, but it was bad. And then Tkachuk, to defend Stützle, went after Jackeye. They wrestled, fell to the ice. He got up, he had blood over his right eye, and looked like he hit his head on the ice and didn't return. And Thomas Chabot didn't return. Ottawa lost Tkachuk, Stützle, and Chabot in a preseason game last night. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not really good.
No, but you know what else could happen?
They could get hurt first game of the season.
They could get hurt in game 83 and 84, which is more ridiculous to me than playing 6 preseason games. So, anyway... Well, that was my third and final rant of the day, and I'll keep that one
brief. They can. Oh. Well, this is where we're going to disagree. I think there is situations like Pare on Laine that in game one of the regular season, yes, Laine could get hurt, but it's not an AHL guy that is hurting your NHL player. And yes, you need to give everybody opportunities in preseason to have some ice time and maybe make the big club. But I think when you get to 6, 7, 8 preseason games, it's too much, too much. I say 4. 4 is the perfect number. Everybody plays 4 preseason games. You get, they practice for 3 days and they play a preseason game right away. Like, I get the players are in better shape than they were 30 years ago, 40 years ago. But give them time to get into the swing of things. Like, nobody should play a preseason game until 1 week of training camp is done. Like, not 3 days in a preseason game, a week of practices, then you get a preseason game, get 4 of them, be ready for the regular season, let's go. That's the way I feel the league should go.
Well, I don't disagree per se on your assessment of when to actually start playing and how often to keep playing in the preseason, but
injuries happen.
Who's lobbying for an 83rd and 84th game? Like, find a way to increase revenue elsewhere. You don't need to add to the schedule.
I'll lobby for it because I think it balances the schedule. Like, the number one decider in making the playoffs is where you rank inside your division. You don't even play the 7 teams in your division the same amount of games. You got some teams you play 4 games. You get some teams you play 3 games. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
So if you play everybody 4 games inside your division and you play everybody in the other division,
non-divisional playoff, because you have wild cards, which means 2 out of 8, which is 25% of the teams, are not related to your division schedule.
I get, but the top 3 is in your division. I just want the schedule to be balanced. To me, it doesn't make sense that
playoffs don't make sense.
Well,
they should be top 8 in the conference and you should play the conference.
Okay, you want to go top 4 in each division? That's fine. Like, right. Okay, let's do it. Top 4 in each division.
I don't want it, though, because I want the diversity, which is presented by having it open to 16 teams and the top 8 make it. And if it's 5 from one division 1 year, if it's 6 from one division 1 year, I would be fine. You know what the answer to that is? You know what the old school answer from a manager in AAA ball is? Play better.
Play better. I get that. I get
you
that.
You want to complain about the format? Duffer? Play better and actually make it.
I have multiple Marty Biron plans. One is 84 games where you play seven teams in your division 4 times, other division 3, the 16 team in the other conference twice. It makes 84 games. But here's how you fix that. If you don't want divisional playoffs, you want conference playoffs. So the top 8 in your conference get in. So here's how you do it, okay? You play 4 times your teams in your division 1 year, and then the next year it's switched. It's the team, like, or don't do any divisions. Just do conferences, and you balance, and you play every team, all 15 in your conference, the same amount of games.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder for the West. It's easier to sit here in an Eastern time zone and recognize that, you know, it's just unfair, obviously, because when you extended out in the West, you're going to have the Central and the Mountain and the Pacific, and that's way more traveling.
You want me to add a little bit to you? Maybe we'll do a new schedule when there's 34 teams in the NHL, and then we'll have to rethink the whole schedule.
Okay, do you think that's another load of you-know-what?
That they're not considering it?
That no one's even thinking about it?
Nah, that's a load of you-know-what. That's definitely, I'll go and
shovel that. Or were they really actually, to the letter of the law, they were legitimate and 100% honest in saying it never came up in this meeting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the Darcy Regier. Like,
but it might have happened before the meeting.
Are you interested in this player? No, as of now, I'm not interested in that player. But in 5 minutes, I will. And 5 minutes ago, I was. But right now, I'm not. Like, that was always the joke with Darcy, is he would answer very, like, straightforward, no, I am not. But we all knew that there's some vagueness to that as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's a crock of, I'll go clean up the chicken coop and bring you a nice handful of it. You know, I think the league is 100% considering expanding because it's $1 billion plus every time it's
makes
going
to
happen.
Makes a lot more sense than adding games 83 and 84, in my opinion. Share the wealth, baby.
And that money does not get shared with the players. That money goes straight to the owners.
Yeah, but you know what? Like,
you know what else goes straight to the owners? Preseason games money does not get shared with the players. Right. So that is why we're getting 7 and 8 preseason games for a lot of teams.
Vegas team of the day is not going to happen for those of you who are hanging in for that. when you talk about it that way, and there have been any number of instances publicly or even semi-privately, some things that we've been privy to, it appears as though we truly are trending in the right direction in labor relations between the players and the owners under the NHL and NHLPA umbrella. Yes. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yes.
Do you think then, based on everything you just noted, which are extremely significant from a revenue standpoint, do you think that even to a small percentage, and for whatever reason, to enhance the livelihood of today's modern day player, or to add to the alumni pool, if you will, how do we help those who played this game and maybe in difficult spots, health-wise, you know, all that, like, do you think there's even a tiniest little appetite? Because what you're talking about potentially here is adding two more teams at prices, expansion fees that we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. So in some sense, you could say it's all gravy, right? For the owners, because they would never have had this kind of windfall financially to be spread out through the whole group. So do you think that there's a possibility because of these good relations that even 1% of all this could somehow go to the players and appease them and make it even more palatable for them? Or are they just going to say, well, you know, 46 more full-time jobs on an annual basis at the very least would be pretty cool?
It used to be the $1,000 question, and then it became the $1 million question. Now it's the $1 billion+ question. Yeah. It's so hard because players that retire are everywhere in the world, and every country has different healthcare systems. And mm-hmm. you know, you can go to Canada and have universal healthcare, and you don't have to worry about it. And then you're in the US, you have to get your own healthcare, and you could be in Sweden and have to deal with something else. It has been talked about. It has been negotiated. It has been brought up and to the table about how do we help the alumni in multiple cases, especially when it comes to healthcare. The sweet spot and the right answer has not been found yet. And it's smart people that are all on it and talk about it. We have great leadership with the Alumni Association and Glenn Healy, and now with Marty Walsh at the Players Association. They've had that conversation. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you this. Gary Bettman comes out at the Board of Governor meeting and he said, hey, we're going to start negotiating a new CBA probably in January. And who knows, maybe by the start of next season, we'll have a new CBA because the CBA expires at the end of 25-26. So we have two seasons. And then
this year and next.
This year and next. And then after that, there needs to be a new CBA. That was all, you know, extended with the COVID and all the new, mm-hmm. you know, details that needed to happen. But Gary Bettman knows very, very well that the players are coming in saying, hey, expansion, we want a piece of it. And this, mm-hmm. that, they're going to come in. I think it's Bettman's way of saying, let's make it look like everything's good. Like, we're all good. Everything's great. Let's start negotiating now. Let's have it done before the start of next year. But there's going to be a lot of sticky points on the table once again for a new CBA in 2 years.
Yeah. Do you think Jeremy Swayman will be signed before the next CBA is done?
I said 24 hours. If it doesn't get done, it's not about the money. It's about the principle of the thing. And right now, like if the Bruins offer 62 and Swayman wants 64, they're close, right? They're mm-hmm. close. It's just, hey, let's get it done. Okay, I'll take it and whatever. But I think now Jeremy Swayman is really ticked off. And the insiders are all starting to get more phone calls about, there's trade talk. There's actual conversation now that maybe the Bruins and Swayman's relationships is so broken, and it started mm-hmm. last year by going to arbitration and you know, going into this summer, mm-hmm. that there could be some trade rumors that are going to make sense really, really soon.
All right, time out. Back one last time on Sabres Live. Stay with us.
Oh, I love it.